Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, everybody? That's right. Welcome to the Terra Dome. This is Eric Citizen Payne here. It's Wednesday evening. We're live again. You call us live. That's Public Enemy. That's Chuck and them. Flav and them. SW1 and them. Griffin them. Terminator X and them. Welcome to the Terra Dome. This is Kay's Son and Friends on the Blog Talk. I don't know, giving Blog Talk a shout out. Because since I pay to be on the platform, you know, it's not like I'm on a network where, you know, you're automatically supposed to give the network a shout out because that's your network, because we paying to be here. So we don't need to give them no shout out. Yeah. Anyway, I'm going to bring the fellas in, you know, so, I know we are got a lot to talk about, stuff we want to talk about. You know, just that telephone call, that ringing reminds me. Sometimes, you ever have a friend who just has the worst timing in the world sometimes? Just like every time they hit you up, it's like at the worst possible time. It's almost like you want to ask, man, how do you do that? That's incredible. But anyway, I get sidetracked. you know, the guy got acquitted again the second time, impeachment, for the second impeachment. Got acquitted for the second time. And I'm trying to figure out what's the best way to talk about things, because it's like you're talking about it round and round in circles till you're blue in the face. Trying to figure out what's the best course of action as we continue in our struggle for freedom in this country, to be relieved of oppression against us as black people. And just watching the news tonight, you're seeing that all these states, 33 states, are enacting some sort of voter restricting legislation. You see this guy getting off. You see how these people react in the face of terrorism. And how many people that are clearly other racists, even though they don't act like they're racist or they believe in white supremacy, they do. There's no talking about it. You know, politics allows people to talk around the subject, you know. And that was one of the things I never really liked about it, that people always talked around the subject as opposed to saying what they mean, you know. The gray area that I often talk about, that's inherent in politics, inherent in a lot of organizations or structural organizations, governments, business. There's a gray area. Certainly the law is a gray area. And it makes you wonder how these things were structured. You know, how was the system of law structured? Like I'm always, you know, challenging how our government was structured. Byron will tell you about the Declaration of Independence and all that. But, you know, like I always say, the honor system only works when you have people who are honorable. And to me, many of these people are exhibiting that they only believe in democracy for themselves, not intended for other peoples. And when that doesn't work out for them, they rebel and revolt and are willing to use violence. I saw a little article in one of the papers or online where it said some Republicans potentially see violence as a necessary course for change. That's individuals who are thinking that they are so right, that their crusade is so right and righteous that they must take all of these extreme actions to achieve that. Kind of like it was almost like a way of life or a doctrine, the doctrine of slavery, how they indoctrinated religion into slavery. And it's makes us need to wake up and really kind of do for ourselves and have that kind of insular mentality, spending our dollar 10, 20 times before it leaves our community, that type of thing. Because, a larger, more dominant community, the majority of the community, a lot of them seem not to want to share, not to want to have a real democracy. So what to do? What to do in face of that as Black people, as we find ourselves at this point in history, right? And we're literally smacked in the face with it. Someone like me, who was born in the 60s, born in 60, the decade of riots and assassinations and really extreme political violence. And maybe this is the first time since the 60s and early 70s that we've seen political violence, the non-peaceful transfer of power, so to speak, in certain circumstances. So what do we do? What do you do at those points in history when history stands up and makes you have to deal with it? This pandemic is one of those. Us experiencing a racist president, a president in modern times is willing to use racism as the flagship of the party, and so many people of his party willing to go along with it, certainly the ones in power. So it causes us to think, what's our course of action? First, we need to have more numbers. You know, my uncle, when he was in Congress, he used to say, you know, it's about the votes. You got to count the votes. Do you have the votes for everything? Right? Everybody talks to the blue in the face, yada, yada, this and that. When it comes down to it, when it's time to vote, do we have the votes? Do we have the majority? And when you're talking about moving a society in a certain direction, you got to have the numbers. You got to have the votes. And just like Georgia came out and decided the presidential election, or was one of the deciding factors in the presidential election, because people were motivated and they had the numbers, right? You got to understand how the numbers, and so we have to understand the numbers and how our numbers affect it. So education and numbers is going to be the key going forward. Education of how the system works, which is, like we always talk about across the board, very few people in our country really understand how the system works. So, you know, some of these people who get crazy and get extreme, you understand a little bit because they're ignorant to how things work. For us as African Americans, if you've been in this country, a descendant of slave or even an immigrant to this country, you understand that you needed to learn how the process worked so it would protect you. So you can use the governmental processes, the structures in place to get your protection, you know, civil rights, you know, and the rest. So all of these things, you know, we got to prepare ourselves and start to put these building blocks in place and understand that there are certain individuals in the other community that are constantly going to attack us for whatever reason, because we exist. People of color, period. They're going to think that this country was for them. They came over here, they murdered, they pillaged for it, even though they like to think they developed it. But, you know, there's people already living here. Before I bring the fellas in, it reminds me, I'm looking at the news tonight about the Chinook Indians on Long Island. They want to build a casino there. And the eastern end, Wayne, you could probably talk a little bit more about this to me. The eastern end of Long Island, they want to build a casino. And they're talking about, you know, it's going to be this and that. And they interviewed people in the area. And, of course, the congestion, people are worried about this. And a lot of the people were saying, well, just as long as the congestion. And one guy was like, well, they deserve it, you know, whatever they need. But it just has to fit in. Hopefully it won't disturb the way of life. And other person said, nah, it shouldn't happen. All of these individuals were white that were against the Native Americans building the casino so they can improve their, you know, because they're obviously they're poor. One of the people admitted that. But and one was an elected official. And it's just ironic to me. It's like, wow, you guys came over and took these people's land, and now they want to do something with it and develop it and do for themselves, and you want to comment about that it's going to mess up your way of life. Wow. Wow, there's a special race of people. Let's bring the fellas. What's up, Byron? Byron Saunders.
Well, considering today is Ash Wednesday.
Hold on, brother, for some reason. Speak.
All right.
Go to B.
Can you hear me now?
There we go. I just had to the volume up. Go ahead.
All right. Considering this is Ash Wednesday, yesterday, of course, was Mardi Gras, Fat Tuesday, your last day, good Christians, to sin and grin. Because your next 40 days, you're supposed to be getting it together. That is, if you do follow the Prince of Peace. So I'm not going to question your spiritual values. I'm going to question your spiritual policies. Because right now, you got a country that's in serious trouble financially. People starving. People are cold. And if I were a biblical scholar on Ash Wednesday, yo, Texas! Is it cold down there enough for you? Y'all don't believe in climate change, do you? In fact, the paradox of that entire situation is that you're an energy-producing state. You ain't got no energy for the people? What you doing? Oh,
on the news,
that's right. Y'all don't believe
in
climate change.
On the news, it said the number one energy-producing place in the world. And then,
come on now. But of course, if I were a biblical scholar on the first day of Ash Wednesday, the season of Lent, I'd say the man upstairs pretty, or Mother Nature is kind of pissed off at the United States. Oh, by the way, that tornado that tore up that Tony community in Carolina, y'all thought y'all were safe? I don't know, Eric.
Yeah.
I'm just calling it as it is, bro. By the way, like our dear friend Wayne, thank you, Wayne. You're a prophet. You're leading the way. I got my COVID shot yesterday, so I'm want to be ready because these variant strains are not, you know, they're not playing. So I really urge you all to understand that now that science and truth are back on the playing field, please pay attention. It ain't going to all be correct, but 90% of what you're going to hear from here forward is going to be the truth and science. And as we all know, truth will set you free and probably will save your damn life. So what? Put the damn mask on.
When you
make it.
Wayne, your mic is open. Byron gave you
I'm listening, and congratulations, Byron and Eric, for at least keeping things real and getting the message out there. I took my second shot on Monday, and I could tell you I have the Pfizer version, and the last 72 hours have not been pretty. But I'm through it.
Right.
I'm hopeful that, you know, things will go on. And Byron, you're right in the Mecca where there's really not many problems in terms of getting vaccination. I understand the Howard University Medical Center, I'm just putting in a plug, all those who are listening from that area, that they are basically giving out the vaccine, and even though there may be a residency requirement, you know, you could wink if you live in Silver Spring or Annapolis or Bowie or places like that. I just want people to know, because people need to be injected. That's my thing. Second thing I want to do, which I wanted to do at the top of the show, a moment of silence for Rush Limbaugh.
No moment of silence.
He's gone. Gone.
We're silent. Look, no, wait a minute.
No
hold
moment
on.
Of silence.
Do I have to
he is
silent?
Gone.
No moment of silence. Good riddance.
It was enough.
Good
that
riddance.
Moment was brief and to the point.
No moment of
okay.
silence. No moment of silence. That's one less racist.
Yeah.
Yeah. One less racist.
No, your mother must have called him or something. I don't know. It's time.
Right.
I mean, a lot of this crap. A lot of
my mother wouldn't reach Rush. She's in a different place. So the call
no,
to my
no,
mom
no,
wouldn't
I, no,
reach him at all.
Saying. I'm sorry. I didn't mean it that way. I did not mean it
you're
that
saying,
way.
No. Go ahead. Go ahead. You were saying.
No, all I'm saying is that all this crap, a lot of it started with him. You know,
right,
it became
right.
entertainment, and then all these other would-be's come along and think they could do it better, like the Glenn Becks and the Sean Hannity's and all those. You know, I mean, it's unfortunate, and there's no regulation, but he was worthy of a Medal of Freedom from the former president. So, you know, he's got his just desserts. You know, as a cancer survivor myself, I don't mind saying this publicly, that, you know, it's not pretty when you hear somebody going for that, but it's going through what he went through. But the bottom line is that, you know, as Byron was trying to point out, sometimes what goes around comes around in life, and certainly Texas is feeling it. And it goes back to what you were saying, Eric, about the racism, the double standards, the voting suppression, you know, all these things that are going on, and it's unfortunate. Can you imagine if the United States depended largely on the energy, and to a certain extent it does, from, let's say there was only one grid and the grid came from Texas. Can you imagine what we would be suffering through right now as a country, how vulnerable we would be? And a select few of handkerchief head Republicans feel that, you know, they're going to blame it on the Green Plan, but they're not looking at the progress of what environmental changes that need to be made to keep this planet safe. They're just looking at money, and they don't care.
Yeah, they're only 21% dependent on green energy down there, and they said that the El Paso area is on a totally different grid. They got no problems at all. The problem, and I was watching this. You sound like you were watching Joy Reid before you came on tonight with as well, because there were some things about Rush as well as about this situation in Texas. But one of the issues in Texas was the deregulation that was put in from George Bush through Rick Perry through, you know, on up, that was the precursor and laid the groundwork for this to be able to happen, because deregulation, the companies weren't putting the necessary works in. They didn't feel that they needed to winterize any of their equipment or even make it even have a high quality job. So now, all these years later, their system goes out. Their power grid system goes out because of, you know, as a result of deregulation and not really, you know, adhering to that in terms of making sure people would have reliable energy, you know.
And that's the unfortunate thing. I mean, the thing is, it's just that a select few make a determination for the rest, the majority. And, you know, I got friends, I got family, and, you know, people moved. I have childhood friends from Brooklyn. Oh, you need to move down here to Houston and blah, blah, this and blah, blah, that. I got a cousin working at one of the medical centers there. Oh, life. You don't have to worry about these things, about snow and shoveling. Let me tell you, man, global warming has leveled the playing field for all of us, you know? And if we don't recognize the signs and do things that are in the best interest of all of our survival. You know, as I pointed out last week, you know, your cousin, not to single him out, but he will be among those progressive lawmakers seeking to improve the quality of life of all Americans, even those who participated in the Capitol riot, you know, on the 6th of January. And it's just unfortunate that a lot of us, the American electorate, you know, the 74 million that went out and supported Mr. Yahoo, they're so ignorant to not see what goes on. And I'm not saying that I'm one to inflict pain on others, but the bottom line is that at some point in your life, you know, you've got to learn from your mistakes. You know, I mean, your mom would tell you not to put your finger over the stove because chances are you're going to get burnt, you know, by playing with the pilot light and all that business. And, you know, you dare her, their back is turned, and then all of a sudden you stick your hand in it, and basically what she had been warning you about happens. There have been so many damn landmarks. There have been so many basic sites that developments throughout the last 10, 15 years that point to a need to change the environment and the way we go about doing things. And not everything is affordable. Every time I hear about problems in the New York City Housing Authority and the projects, that there are a lot of people, you know, God bless them, I mean, that's the only way they could survive, by living, you know, on the margins of whatever life provides them. And yet, you know, with all this modern technology, with New York being one of the most affluent cities in the country, let alone the world, you mean to tell me that you cannot convert a system that's been broken for the last 50 or 60 years to something that's going to save all New Yorkers money? You know, you pointed out the issue with the Shinnecock Indians out in the east end of Long Island. All those people who are opposing that are people who don't want an invasion of folks who look like us coming out there supporting that. And very often, just given the examples of other institutions that have set up in other parts of the country, in Jersey, Atlantic City, Connecticut, I think of some of the casinos up there that have been run now by Native Americans. There's one that's upstate New York. I forgot exactly what town it is, but it's above the Catskills, and they're doing phenomenally well. They're providing jobs. But it's the ignorance, it's this despicable disease that we have to have this division, you know, amongst us, that this keeps us down, and we're paying a price for it.
I don't particularly have a problem with I certainly understand someone, obviously you're going to have a casino that's going to, it is going to create a lot of congestion and traffic. I understand all of that. But, you know, what's good, the thing we're talking about, I think what's good for the goose is good for the gander. If casinos can go up in primarily poor black and brown areas, then certainly they can go up in another area if someone has the ability to develop and build it. And I, you know, I understand their point of view, but it's not lost on me the irony of Native Americans trying to develop a business that's going to improve, like you said, Wayne, the quality of their life, and pretty much the quality of everybody who lives around there in terms of jobs and things like that, albeit it probably is going to be a little congested and your little area out in the Hamptons or whatever might be, you know, interrupted. But the land was stolen. You're on stolen land. You know, I mean, just the concept of, you know, it's kind of like the notion about slavery. It's like, okay, you know, a lot of times white people want to say, okay, slavery, but that was a long time ago. You know, that whole notion for a long time when people wanted to kind of sweep it under the rug. It's like, yeah, it was a long time ago, but you got to understand the context of it and the effects of it and the effects of it generationally, how it affects. If it was a long time ago and that was the end of it and the be all of it and we all start over again from square one equally, yeah, then you could say that was a long time ago. But as long as people are suffering from the effects, the lingering effects of a system that was put in place not only to, for these effects to linger, but to continue to perpetuate and do the job that they've been doing for those hundreds of years, and you don't change the system, then you got to keep talking about it. And it's clear when a lot of these individuals that are embedded in the system that are have been conspirators in keeping that racist system going and perpetuating it forward, you know.
And I happen to agree, but, you know, I tell you, one of the things that you pointed out about the congestion, I laugh at that because I used to spend a lot of summers out in the island, and I could tell you I haven't gone in the last couple of years, but, you know, they never talk about the congestion that exists now on 27 and Route 24 when you want to get to the East End because Long Island is a fork. You get past Riverhead, one goes south, the other one's north. But, you know, there should be a demand for transportation to increase. The Long Island Railroad goes to the end, to Montauk, and there's no excuse. Increase the number of trains coming out there. You know, we have a very successful casino in Queens, resorts. It's right off the Aqueduct Racetrack, right next to the subway and the railroad, for that matter. And they're providing jobs for people who look like us, you know. And that's what I'm looking at. I mean, there's a lot of space, you know, that can be used for the development of that without incringing or infringing upon those folks who feel that they will be encumbered by a flow of traffic. You know, there's already traffic coming from the city and western Long Island that I don't understand the excuse. Fix the problem that they have now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
This is just racism.
One thing is certain. They have a track record of running a casino much better than the one that just got torn down in Atlantic City. Hello.
That's
okay.
Right.
Did I say more?
Hell, so yeah, that's pretty ironic.
People on Long Island better pay attention because I think they'll make more money inviting the Shinnecock neighbors back into the places that they were originally living. Because why? They know the land. They know money.
Exactly.
Come on now. There's a reality check here, my good friends on Long Island. You know, you wouldn't. That's right, because now, certainly after you saw the tumbling of the Trump casino in Atlantic City, you know, it's like an empire falling, and they're going to keep falling and falling and falling. And this what? Guess what?
Oh.
Guess what? I heard, I could not believe my ears were hearing it, and I know your ears were burning. Lindsey Graham, what Confederacy is he working with now?
He's working with whoever. Before we move there, hold on for a second. Put a pin in that real quick. But I just wanted to point about the Shinnecock Indians.
I
saw the news clip today, and the spokesman for them, it was a brother, light-skinned brother, you know.
Yeah.
And it was a combination. I think these are a combination of probably blacks and Native Americans. There's probably some that have, intermarried and things like that. But the guy that was speaking as the representative today was definitely – had some African American heritage in him.
Well, that's
so,
because
that's probably
the history of the island. Is the history of the island, Eric? That's because the Shinnecock Nation, one of the tribes, is called Matinecock. The Matinecock Nation resided in Flushing. They were dark-skinned Indians, blacker than you and me. We look more Indian than they did because they look very dark-skinned. Okay, so this is about race. It ain't about economy.
Exactly.
Once again, white people are rearing up because their racist behavior is to keep out people of color, period.
Right. So what were you going to say about Lady G?
Lady G? Who is Lady G?
I'm lost.
Lindsey Graham.
Are you talking about
Lindsey Graham? Oh, okay, gotcha.
Oh, that Lady G, of course I knew. Hey, listen, I'm just messing with him, okay? Because I was going to say something else. I think I'll say this just because it's clever. I'd like to know whose big toe is he sucking?
Easy, bro. What are you talking about? What's going on?
Well, no, that's okay. I can't go beyond that.
Easy.
This is comedy. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But Wayne got it.
Well, everybody gets it, bro. I'm just telling you, I'm not sure if we needed to get it. That ain't the problem.
Well, because it's
other
very apparent. He just went off the boat. What did he drink? Lizzie Graham.
What are you referring to when you're speaking
God.
About Lizzie Graham in particular? What's the most recent?
Yeah, well, I mean, because he basically what he did was just last night he said to his Republican Party, "Y'all got to buck it up and suck it up because without the orange one, our party is dead." And then he said to the orange one, "You're going to have to make some changes." Really? Really, Lindsey Graham? You're guilty.
He's gone. He's it's just a matter of time before all these lawsuits catch up. I don't understand those Republicans I didn't understand those that supported the acquittal, including what's his name, McConnell. I mean, it just that makes no sense to me at all. I think to a certain extent, Trump's reaction to the McConnell vote yesterday, or was it today, where he came out and said something about his behavior, you know, it was pretty dead on. You know, when you look at his personality and the things that he does, he just blows with the freaking wind. But the problem is there's a faction now that's growing that wants to distance themselves from this guy because they realize Trump has no integrity. And he represents a wing of the party that's, you know, sick. It's errant. It just needs to be eradicated. Period. I don't see how this party could continue on the course that it's on, you know, with that mindset that 45 used to espouse. You know, I mean, it's despicable.
Yeah.
Well, this is a party who sold it, that, you know, made its own bed, got in it, made a contract with the devil, and now it's pay up time. And they're in a vortex death spiral right now. Hello, goodbye, see you later. Brought it on to yourself. I have no empathy or sympathy. I want you all in jail. You want to start a new party? Start a new party that knows how to tell the truth.
Yeah.
Yeah, they go ahead, Wayne.
No, I was just going to say that's the issue right there. You know, the onus, the burden on all of them right now is to come out and tell the truth about the vote. You know, because if social media is not regulated and you got places which they could go to get information, then it's basically the burden of those elected, you know, to have the cojones to come up and step up and say, yes, Joe Biden won the election, period, whether you support me or not. But everything is based on their support from their constituency, and the constituency is being misinformed, you know, and that's it. And I think there are a number of red states who get it, you know, but it's that element out there, the Proud Boys and the Boogaloo Boys and all. You know, it's that group that has somehow managed to infiltrate with the election of this lady, Green, you know, one of the ugliest people I've seen. I mean, she's almost like coyote-faced at this point, but somehow she gets the attention. I shouldn't even go there. I mean, it's not about looks. It's just her demeanor. And
right.
And just the, you know, the things that she tries to get away with. I said this before I was elected, and, you know, somehow that can be dismissed. You know, it's like your belief system now, because you're an elected official, is far different from what it was before. But yet, before your election, you were supporting the agenda of what half of the country doesn't want and voted this man out for. Hopefully half or more than half, you know?
Well, I mean, that's... I mean, I don't believe anything. They could say whatever they want to say, but they show who they are. I mean, the senators that voted with the Democrats to convict Donald Trump in the impeachment trial, all of their states are censoring them. And so it tells you where their party's coming from to me. I mean, they pretty much have made the choice that for the most part, when you look at the moves that many of them made, vote not to convict those 43 senators. Even though you get someone like Mitch talking out of both sides of his mouth, talking about he needs to be convicted, but then voting not to convict him. Kevin McCarthy.
Exactly.
Kevin McCarthy, you know, begging him to send troops and stuff and then going to visit the guy. So, they're all just talking out of both sides of their mouths. And Democrats, really, what we need to work on and make sure is that everybody that claims they're on our side is going to be on our side, and we're all working for the same goal, because clearly people have infiltrated our ranks. And like I said, just because everybody wants democracy, they might not want democracy for all people. So they might ride with us for a minute, you know, and then jump off at the perfect time. I mean, look at all the Republicans.
I would like to, with respect to the impeachment and the acquittal by way of kangaroo court, I'm gonna flip the script slightly. Yes, the Constitution said you had to have 2/3. But guess what? The majority voted to convict him. Are we not a majority rule nation, gentlemen?
Yeah.
Come on now.
Yeah.
Because at the point of which.
So what's that mean? I mean,
the
rules
in
that, the rules, but that don't
history.
Mean nothing. The rules in that body said you
but
need
hold
2/3.
On, hold
what does
on.
That mean?
Hold on. But because the history of the country in its 244 years old is still emerging as an ideal, because compared to the other great nations and powers of the world, we're a baby. But here's the rule. Here's the rule of thumb that's going to look back as history will write this moment. As it's already been spoken, in the history of this country, this is the first time that a majority voted to convict him.
Right.
And when he leaves this court of opinion from the Supreme Court on down to the two executive branches, there's nothing he can do within the state systems of justice that have now got him.
What do you mean nothing
federal
he can
courts,
do? In no way.
There's
nothing
they
nothing
can do to
do?
Overturn convictions in the state of Georgia, in New York, in
D.C. Yeah, yeah.
The federal government is has hands off.
Well, yeah,
and
of course.
They will
convict
him.
Issue.
The NAACP's legal defense fund is suing him. The congressman is suing him. And the case by all constitutional scholars saying this could destroy him.
Right.
I say destroy him.
Well, the whole objective was to try to get it so he couldn't run for office again. But clearly he can run for office. But I think they achieved their larger objective, which was to put him on blast like that for everybody to see, and also put the Republicans on blast as having voted to let the guy off, you know, like it's all white Southern jury. The whole thing about it is whether the Democrats can continue to let everybody know, and to, you know, like I've always said, not only Democrats can be punks from time to time, but we can also not want to talk about our achievements or have no PR, you know, like
right.
Where they talk about the same thing over and over again, they get it. We have no PR. And also, too, we don't respond when asked to answer for somebody else's mess. Perfect example, like everybody talking about, well, the vaccines aren't getting the rollout isn't fast enough. There's confusion in the rollouts. And the Biden, what are you talking about? People shouldn't even fix their mouth to be looking at Joe about nothing about the vaccines. You shouldn't
thank
even
you.
Be asking them no questions. Just say thank you. We're glad you're here. No one should have the nerve to be asking them questions about what are you going to do. Of course, that's the nature of the beast. So they do.
Yeah.
Like, for example, I'll give you a question example this morning. And I happen to see it on the news, Savannah Guthrie asking the vice president about, and it was a very particular, specific question. It was a question with which she could not give a yes or no answer. But Savannah asked the question as if it's not a yes or no answer to this question. So therefore, when you present it as such, it's misleading to the public, isn't it? When you present a question that can't be answered with a yes or no question. And that's what they do, and that's how they mislead people. It was like, can you assure, as the issue with the teachers and people going back to school, can you assure the teachers that they'll be safe going back to school, Madam Vice President, that based on what the CDC says? Well, of course, you know, the Vice President talked about all of the issues that would affect this choice. And then she asked her the same question, but the bottom line, she answered the same question. She answered again, can you answer the question? So do you feel free? But it's not a yes or no answer to the question, because each state
exactly.
has different requirements. Every state has different requirements in terms of what they're going to require with the vaccines and the schools. So you're misleading the public, aren't you, Savannah, when you put this question to the Vice President as if, when she says, if she were to say no, right, then it's like, oh, you guys don't have your shit together, right? Oh, here we go, more politics. And once she starts talking about all of the variables that go into the equation, now you're making her look like she's a talking around the issue politician. So it's damned if you do, damned if you don't, because she posed the question in such a way that it's misleading when the person has to answer it. It's not a yes or no question. This is what I'm talking about. This is what I'm talking about. I'm seeing who some of these media types are, and some that want to act like, well, we're objective and I'm liberal and all this. But I'm seeing the moves you're making. And maybe you're supposed to be objective, but if you're objective, then why are you answering?
Why ask the question?
Why are you asking slanting questions then if you're trying to be objective? You know, just ask what's the problem. What's the problem with teachers not going? That's what you got to ask, as opposed to say, is it a yes or no answer? Get out of here with that, man. It's just like the other chick. I mean, and Nicole Wallace, and I get on these. I watch MSNBC and NBC a lot, as well as some other things. And their stuff is, because I see it so much, it's a lot more subtle, less glaring than like a Fox or a One American News Network or all these other places where they're just blatant with it, right? These people are acting like they're trying to somehow be objective, or they've seen the light. I was a Republican, but now I'm not, because they've gone so far. But meanwhile, you were helping them build the building blocks for them to get to that height that they're at now, and now you want to back out. You know what I'm saying? You can't help cats plan the getaway route. And then when they get away with the crime, now you want to back out and act like you wasn't down with them. That's kind of corny to me. You know what I'm saying? So all these, you know.
You're absolutely right. The only thing that I would give MSNBC credit for is that they've done a lot to improve the presence, and I'm just saying NBC in general, of people of color. You know, it's like, you know, there was a time you'd hardly see us, but that seems to be part of their history. I mean, going back to when they first started, I mean, they gave shows to people like Nat King Cole and Sammy Davis Jr.
Yeah,
you know, Sam Cooke. You never thought
that
these people would have an opportunity, but, you know, it still doesn't mean that you're exempt from doing the right thing, because the very networks that you're criticizing, like Fox and some of the others that have just started up, you know, I mean, you want to be balanced. You want to provide a profile that shows some integrity, you know, never mind that you have all these folks, you know, in front of the camera and acting pretty and all that business. You know, I could certainly call some names, one I've worked with, but the bottom line, two I've worked with as I think of it, but you know, at the end of the day, you know, it's about integrity. It's about telling the truth. And if you have somebody in the woodshed that's messing up, you know, bring it to their attention. I mean, I happen to like Nicole Wallace in the transition that she's made from being a Republican to who she is now. But the bottom line is, some things are just so deeply entrenched in one's upbringing. It's like, you know, I know I've been a beneficiary of white privilege. How do I express myself as being woke, since I now understand what it's like, or I'm constantly being interviewing people who have not had that privilege? I interact with people who would not understand. They just know what it's like, but they don't have the understanding of being someone who doesn't have to worry about how banks look at me and school districts look at me because I am white, you know? Mm-hmm. And those are the things that get to me. But I'm a little biased when it comes to Republicans. I even if you made a transition, you know, I still don't understand Colin Powell. You know, I don't understand Condoleezza Rice. You know, I know that we're not a monolith. You know, but it doesn't mean that I have to embrace what it is that you're doing and understand the agenda. I know there was a wholesale move to make the party more inclusive. Mike Steele was a part of that, and look where it's gotten them. You know, they're going to have to do something, man. They're going to have to do something now for their own survival. Or this country's going to just...
I think one of the things that's pushing them, though, is that right now, as of today, the current president's approval rating is 62%. One out of every 10 Republicans is going along with the ride right now, and that's because they're hearing the truth. It's revealing. It's refreshing.
Yeah.
And it's setting them free, even if they don't realize they're being set free, because 200 million doses extra have been bought. July, June, the country will have enough doses for everybody, 600 million doses.
There you go.
It took a whole year for us to really grasp the immediate emergency of what was going on, and now we're in this place. Now we got variant strains coming from everywhere: Brazil, South
Africa,
England.
Why did
it take
the whole year for us to grasp the emergency? You mean from the time it started?
Because from a point of policy making. Because
well,
at
there was
that
no,
point,
there was no policy
there
in
was
place.
No
it wasn't,
policy.
There was no policy in
there
place.
There was no policy.
Year.
Yeah, for an entire year.
No, it wasn't even for a year. It wasn't even for a policy.
Yeah.
Wasn't even in place for a year. You're saying an entire year. I'm saying it wasn't even in place for a year.
But there was a pandemic playbook that the previous administration to the last one left.
Right. Oh, yeah.
They chose to jettison it. They chose to gut it. And look what it got them. The first thing they did was to reduce CDC's budget by $700 million, cutting out the scientists, cutting out the people who would do the research. And then he replaced the CDC with sycophants who sat up there and lied to us for a year. So by now, next week, by the end of this week, 500,000 people are dead. That's what I'm talking about, policy.
Yeah. It's sad, man. And there should be accountability for that. I'm sorry.
That's
you know, you stand up and there's enough memorialized material about some of the news conferences they would hold with the orange face man, and it was supposed to be okay. Everything would have been done by now, you know, and we would have been past it. As, you know, you talk to or listen to what Fauci has to say in recent days. You know, all of a sudden now they're looking towards 2022 for things to come back to normal to a certain extent. But there should be accountability for that. There should be, you know, some sort of commission set up to find out exactly, you know, what went wrong and why is it that we don't need to be in this place again because it sets us back. You know, Americans are going to be paying for this.
What do you mean
accountability
are you talking about? You said there should be accountability.
Well,
what are you talking about?
There should be accountability for people who have a degree or license to talk about things and were part of an administration that wanted people to think a certain way.
Are you just talking about
and
the
it clearly was not the agenda at all.
You're talking about
you know, it's like when Biden and Harris walked in there, they thought that they were going to come inherit a plan of some sort of roadmap blueprint to follow. There was nothing.
Right, right.
You know? And I think there should be some. That's no different than these idiots coming to the Capitol and killing six people. You know, look how many Americans die because of you know this man's ignorance, and it's all that blood is in his hands. I don't care what anyone says.
I agree with you. The accountability level is an adjustment that is not going to be rushed, because Pelosi and General Honoré met 2 days ago to go over the accountability of the breach of security. And in his overall assessment, his job is to pick out those who were aiding and abetting within the Capitol and outside the Capitol's parameters. So there will be accountability. And the reason why the Republican Party is running like it's a chicken without its head right now is because the accountability has got their names on it.
Right, but when you're talking about more of accountability in terms of policy and things that should have been taking place, that they should have taken care of before, in terms of like the pandemic, right? Actually having a policy and follow through in place. That's what Wayne's talking
and
about.
In order to engage the accountability of the Justice Department, it is very right that the president cannot use the Justice Department as it was just used previously, but allow the new justice head of the FBI, our attorney general, to take those cases that have been standing still because of interference by Barr, by the president. You see, and those are the cases that are still outstanding, so they're not going to be dismissed. So when Garlic
Byron, you're referencing cases. What exactly are you referencing? Because we're talking about a couple of things.
I'm referring the cases against Trump, the cases against Lindsey Graham for making that call to Georgia, against the McCarthy, who took the call and did, and pretty much Tuberville, all of those people who, like they said, who gave the tours when that order was to not give tours anywhere in the Capitol since March of 2020.
Someone being held responsible along those lines.
That's
Honoré
right.
And Pelosi, other than the trial, because the impeachment trial is over. That was Trump's thing.
But
Wayne's
that was not a trial. That was, see, let's be clear. That was not a Justice Department trial. That was adjudicated in the Senate as part of their constitutional responsibility. They failed to get to 2/3, but they did get a majority to convict. Now the Justice Department has outstanding cases.
Like convicting
the Justice Department has,
it's not a trial.
It's predicated. The Constitution does not consider it to be a trial. A trial by jury that is not tampered with by those who are being jurors. That was not a trial.
Well, it's a similar outcome, right? Because the Senate members were the ones who were sitting in judgment of whether to vote for or not.
But they were also involved in jury tampering. Why give a free pass? If we're going to go by the way the rule of law and court is assembled for justice in a trial, when did you ever see a jury get up from its seat and have a conversation on the floor of the court itself with the opposing attorney to brief
in the
him
Senate,
on then how to
it
get
were,
aggressive?
When the shit is taking place with the dudes who make up the rules, that's how they roll. Unfortunately, that's why the rest of the country says it's bullshit.
I think, you know, before we go any further, because I know we could get lost in the weeds with this, but the most important thing is that they were in the court of public opinion. The Democrats succeeded because they were able to amplify over a period of 3 days or more basically what went on. Every time you saw a video of it, it galvanized certain thoughts in their mind. Even if this idiot had the audacity to run again as president 4 years from now, there is enough playbook material to go back and use commercials against them, even those who are seeking to run. I dare Ted Cruz and the guy with little fingers in Florida to even consider running for higher office, let alone expunge from the Senate. You know, I mean, the deal is that these people need to be called out, and it's a confluence of events. There should be a commission on what they did, a commission against people like Barr. There should be a commission about all these, you know, licensed doctors who had all sorts of integrity and misinforming the public about the severity of the crisis of what we went through. You know, that should be documented, man, in my opinion. You know, and I'm certain there's enough out there. But again, you know, we have so much to learn, and I really feel that, you know, I know how the black community fares about taking this this vaccine, man, but it just seems that's our only choice at this point, you know? And I'm so glad that an HBCU seems to be, you know, being very proactive and trying to get arms in there to be injected. And I'm telling friends, I hope Cuomo's listening because we need that up here. You know, not that we have an HBCU to point to, but, you know, we need to get this stuff moving. No excuse.
In terms of it getting to black and brown people in the state of New York, that's what you're talking about?
Exactly.
Okay.
You know, it's not about just going to Yankee Stadium. It's not about living. I don't live in Queens, you know? I mean, I don't live in you know, even if I lived in the Bronx, it's like, you know, there should be, you know, and I know things are not going to change in a nanosecond, but there should be a plan. And that's the thing, you know. I mean, the deal is that, you know, I put that thing out about Howard because I know even though on their website they say there's a residency requirement, but they're winking at folks coming from out of state because they know it's needed. And I don't mean to put their business out in the street, but I have friends who already got their injection because Howard was doing what they're doing.
Right.
Well, they don't live in the district.
They don't want them to go to waste, so they're sure, you know, when they have them available, they'd rather give them to people at the last minute than having the vaccine go to waste. You know, hopefully we are in a tough spot, our communities, because we don't trust them, but you got to trust them, and who knows, man. But I think the black doctors are the ones we can trust in terms of leading the way and people feeling a little bit more secure about getting. My dad got his second shot yesterday. So
did he get Pfizer or I don't mean to. I
don't know
which.
I don't know which. So I'm happy that he was able to get them, you know, because I'm
right.
Concerned. So. You got to, I mean, you know, the success ratio is in the 90s percentile or whatever. You got your second one, Wayne, and Byron, you got your first?
Yeah, just on President's
Day. Yeah, got my first.
There it is. Well,
it was quite an ordeal. I have to acknowledge the somewhat ease of it, but, you know, when you're dealing with seniors,
and we got
our patient line is a little bit shorter
seconds.
Than most.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so I saw what happens when you don't go by the rules that you establish. And then when you start to calling numbers out of sequence, seniors are human beings. Don't play us like we're children.
Right. Yeah. Well, there it is. You get the last word, brother. There it is. We got to go.
Peace and love always.
All right, Brother Byron Saunders. We'll talk to you again. Maybe over the weekend, maybe not. I know I say that, but we'll see. We got a lot of shit,
lot
of stuff to talk about. All right, talk to you later. Wayne Gilman, my brother.
All the best. Keep hope alive, brother. That's all I can say.
Yeah, the days are looking up, man. So we'll see what happens. Also, too, we forgot to talk about Andrew Cuomo and the pickle that he's in. We got to talk about that next time.
Right.
All right, my brother. We'll talk to you again.
All right, Wayne Gilman.
There he is, the legendary newsman, the legendary historian, Byron Saunders. I'm Citizen Payne. This is Kay's Son and Friends. I'm trying to find my music so I can play my music going out for the peoples. That would be you guys. Maybe not all peoples. Oh, did I get off of the air? Hold on, everybody. Anyway, look, folks, I want to say thanks. We'll talk to everybody later on. And like that there, thanks for listening. Friends, all right? I'm trying to find my music for you guys to be listening to. Does not seem to want to come up. Anyway, Public Enemy and them. I'm out. Until next time.